You're listening to According to Sam, episode 134. All right, folks, welcome to According to Sam. This is episode 134. If you listen to my podcast that I... I think it was before, maybe a week before Russia invaded Ukraine and went into Ukraine. Let's look here. I have my list of podcasts here. So it would have been episode... down here. It was a while ago. I mean, it's almost been a year since the war in Ukraine has been going on and Russia going into Ukraine. It looks like this is episode 102, and that is the episode Wag the Dog, and we were, you know, this is when Joe Biden was coming out saying that Russia was going to invade and that they were setting up and getting ready to invade. And I doubted that Russia was going to actually invade. I wasn't taking the Biden administration's word for it. And I wasn't the only one. There are a lot of people. I played the clip in that episode with the reporter going in on the Defense Department saying that, you know, no one can trust your intelligence. And then a few weeks later, Russia finally does go in, and the Biden administration was boasting, see, we were right. You know, you guys didn't believe us, and we were right. They went in. And then in episode 6, I did 106. So 102 is the episode Wag the Dog. This is before Russia went in. And then episode 106 and 107, that was a few weeks later, Russia had already gone in. And I said in those podcasts when I was talking about this conflict back then that Russia held all of the cards because they had this natural resource that not only the world needed, not only that the world wanted, but they needed it. They were dependent on the Russian energy, the oil and natural gas. Particularly Europe was dependent, is dependent on this Russian fossil fuel. And we talked about the Nord Stream pipeline that they were building, Nord Stream 2. We talked about all of that in those episodes, and you may want to go back and listen to those episodes after you listen to this episode today, because we're going to talk about Russia and Ukraine and what's going on there. But in those podcasts months ago, when this war had first started, I said on my podcast that Russia held all the cards because they had this natural resource that the European nations, and not only European nations, the world needed this resource. And that was this fossil fuel, the natural gas and the oil. Particularly the natural gas is what was flowing through the Nord Stream pipelines. But that card, that ace in the hole that Vladimir Putin had, has just been taken from him. And I don't know why I didn't anticipate something like this happening, because the reason that I didn't anticipate it is because it is such a huge escalation of this war. The war was just between Ukraine and Russia. And yes, outside forces like the United States, Europeans were supporting Ukraine in that war and have been. But essentially, it was a war against Ukraine and Russia. Well, what happened today to the Nord Stream pipelines has escalated this war and has broadened it beyond just Russia and Ukraine, because if you don't know what happened today with the Nord Stream pipelines from Russia into Denmark were destroyed. I don't know if they were destroyed, but they were sabotaged. There were explosions, and there's natural gas leaking out of the pipelines now. They're not going to be able to be used, and they don't know when they're going to be able to be up and running. This is the end of September. We're in fall. Fall has officially kicked off a week ago. So we're officially in fall. We are going into the fall months and then into the winter months, and this happens now. There was already going to be energy shortages in Europe. This just, you know, accentuates that. And it was 100% sabotage. Everyone is now, I have clips. I have a lot of clips that I'm going to play. Let's start with this one. Talks a little bit about what happened, and this is CBS. So they're going to be telling the American narrative. And take a listen to this CBS clip.
Tonight, European leaders are accusing Russia of sabotaging two underwater gas pipelines in the Baltic Sea.
So Russia, European leaders are accusing Russia of sabotaging their own pipeline. And basically destroying their only ace in the hole, the only real card that they have. Now, it's not the only real card that they have. Russia has the largest nuclear arsenal on this planet. Let me say that again, because a lot of people don't know that. A lot of people think that it's the United States that has the largest nuclear arsenal in the world. No, it's Russia. They have the most ICBMs. They have the most tactical nukes. They have the largest nuclear arsenal on this planet. So just understand that. So taking away the gas and the fossil fuel card doesn't really take away all of their cards. They still have an ace in a hole, but that the only ace in the hole that they're left with now is nuclear conflict. I can't say it any clearer than that, any more clearer than that. That's the only thing that they have left now, because their real ace in the hole before this was their natural gas and their oil and European and the world's dependency on their gas. Now, someone has taken that card away. So the only card they have left now is the nuclear card. But the European countries, as this CBS report is saying, that the European countries are saying that it was Russia that destroyed their own pipeline and this ace in the hole that they had as leverage against the world with their natural gas and their oil. Does that make sense to you? More of this report from CBS.
Tonight, European leaders are accusing Russia of sabotaging two underwater gas pipelines in the Baltic Sea. Ukraine is calling it a terrorist attack. Authorities are investigating the leaks in the Nord Stream 1 and 2 pipelines, a vital source of natural gas for Europe. There was a sudden drop in pressure on Monday. Video shows bubbles where the leaks occurred after underwater explosions were detected.
Underwater explosions were detected. So the question of this being sabotage or not being sabotage is, quite frankly, there are people that are still questioning if this was sabotage, even though the underwater explosions were detected. But right now, I don't believe those people are serious people at all. One of those people who is questioning still, and we don't have all the facts. We don't know if this was sabotage or not, is the Secretary of State for the Biden administration, which means this, he's the representative, he's representing the Biden administration when he says this. But take a listen to Anthony Blinken. He still doubts if this was sabotage or not. Take a listen.
The leaks are under investigation. Their initial reports indicating that this may be the result of an attack or some kind of sabotage, but these are initial reports and we haven't confirmed that yet. But if it is confirmed, that's clearly in no one's interest.
Oh my God.
Indicating that this may be the result of an attack or some kind of sabotage, but these are initial reports and we haven't confirmed that yet. But if it is confirmed, that's clearly in no one's interest.
Listen to what this guy's saying. He's saying that first of all, that it hasn't been confirmed if this was sabotage or not. Both pipelines, not just one pipeline, has a leak and is not functional. Both pipelines have been, and I keep saying destroyed because I don't think they're destroyed. I think they can be repaired, but it's going to take some time. And I don't think that they're going to be repaired before this long, dark winter that we're facing. But, I mean, the explosions were detected by the government of Poland. That this was in the Baltic Sea, so right off the coast of Poland, they detected the explosions, the loss of pressure, and immediately after the explosions, then you start seeing the bubbles on top of the water. This is all, one action after another. The explosions detected, the loss of pressure, then you see the bubbles. They're monitoring all of this. Anthony Blinken, your Secretary of State, just said that it hasn't been confirmed yet. We don't know if this was sabotage, but if it is confirmed that this was sabotage, if it is confirmed that some nation, somebody did this on purpose and destroyed these pipelines, it's in nobody's interest. Well, if it's in nobody's interest, then why would someone intentionally destroy them or blow them up? It's got to be in somebody's interest because somebody did this. Whose interest is it in? Now, it's not in Russia's interest. It's not in Russia's interest at all. No one can make an argument for it being in Russia's interest. I can damn sure make an argument for it to be in the United States' interest. And not, it's not in my interest as an American citizen and as American citizens. It's not in our interest. The elites, the people that are running the United States, the people who are running Joe Biden, it's in their interest. The war machine, the military industrial complex who's selling all the arms to Ukraine, who wants to keep the Ukraine war going, who wants to amp up. I'm going to show you this, that who wants to escalate the war with Russia, who wants war, the war machine that Dwight Eisenhower warned us about in 1960. It's in their interest. Definitely, I can make a case for it to be being in their interest. Can't make a case for it being in Russia's interest, but I can damn sure make a case for it being in the military industrial complex's interest. So let's listen to more Blinken here.
The leaks are under investigation. Their initial reports indicating that this may be the result of an attack or some kind of sabotage, but these are initial reports and we haven't confirmed that yet. But if it is confirmed, that's clearly in no one's interest. Now, my understanding is the leaks will not have a significant impact on Europe's energy resilience. And what's critical is that we are working day in, day out, both on a short-term basis and a long-term basis, to address energy security for Europe and for that matter around the world.
What's critical is that we're working to secure energy for Europe and for the rest of the world. Listen to what he says here again.
And what's critical is that we are working day in, day out, both on a short-term basis and a long-term basis, to address energy security for Europe and for that matter, around the world.
So he said that what's critical is that we're working day in and day out to secure energy for Europe and the rest of the world on a short-term basis. That means this winter. And a long-term basis means, you know, beyond this winter. And it just so happens that a new pipeline from Norway called the Baltic Pipeline, and I'm sure it comes through the Baltic Sea as well, from Norway through the Baltic Sea to Poland. And this new pipeline delivering natural gas from Norway to Poland just happens to open and is starting operations today, on the same day, within hours of the Nord Stream pipelines being destroyed. I mean, what a coinky dink that this new pipeline, the Baltic pipeline from Norway to Poland, just happened to, you know, open today. Today was the big kickoff, and then this weekend is when it's going to start shipping gas from Norway to Poland. And isn't that a coincidence? Take a listen to this clip about the Baltic pipeline.
Well, EU countries have been racing to reduce their dependence on Russian energy. Before the invasion of Ukraine, Russia supplied around 40% of European natural gas imports. Now, Brussels is looking to other potential suppliers. On Tuesday, a new pipeline to pump Norwegian gas to Poland was inaugurated. It's set to be operational this weekend.
So it was inaugurated today, going to be operational, start shipping gas this weekend. And on the same day as the inauguration, and all of these people are in Poland celebrating the inauguration of this new pipeline, it's essentially going to be a fraction of the natural gas that was coming from Russia. That's what Blinken meant when he says on a short-term basis, we're working day and night to secure this gas for this winter on a short-term basis. So we are going to open up this pipeline from Norway. And the production that comes from this pipeline from Norway is going to start out here. She says it right here.
On Tuesday, a new pipeline to pump Norwegian gas to Poland was inaugurated. It's set to be operational this weekend. James Mulholland has more.
As Russian gas leaks into the sea, an inauguration heavy with symbolism. Poland, Denmark and Norway opened a new pipeline which will deliver Norwegian gas to Poland for the first time. The Baltic Pipe will deliver 6.5 billion cubic metres of gas in 2023. That's scheduled to rise to 7.7 billion cubic metres the following year.
All right, so 6.5 billion cubic meters this year, and they're starting off, I assume that's a fraction of what they were getting from Russia, starting off small, and then they expect to take it up to 7.7 billion cubic meters the following year, and as they increase production, they're will ramp it up. This is what Tony Blinken was talking about when he says that we're working short term for this winter to increase production and find these resources from other places besides Russia, and we expect to increase the production and the suppliers and production from different suppliers, some coming from the Middle East, some coming from Norway, Canada. Everybody's got to increase production to make up, you know, everybody's got to do a little bit more to make up for what we're not going to get from Russia, and we're just going to drown Russia out. This is the plan. Let's listen to more of this clip.
An inauguration heavy with symbolism. Poland, Denmark, and Norway opened a new pipeline which will deliver Norwegian gas to Poland for the first time. The Baltic Pipe will deliver 6.5 billion cubic meters of gas in 2023. That's scheduled to rise to 7.7 billion cubic meters the following year. The prime ministers of Poland and Denmark said the move will boost energy security and independence across Europe.
Today we are entering a new era, an era of energy sovereignty, of energy freedom, and of enhanced security, energy security, but also of security in the broader sense.
I'm very proud that we have done this together. We have to do all we can to remove energy as a Russian instrument of power and to provide our citizens with cheaper energy.
Baltic Pipe aims to end Poland's and indeed the European Union's dependence on Russian energy. Moscow shows no signs of resuming its gas deliveries, which has seen EU countries scramble to secure new suppliers before the winter. At the weekend, German Chancellor Olaf Scholz secured a new deal for gas and diesel with the UAE.
And this is hilarious. The German Chancellor is going to Saudi Arabia and UAE into these Arab countries, and he's doing business with Saudi Arabia. So they've changed one devil for another, basically. And Biden was over there doing business with Saudi Arabia and the Arabs and trying to get them to produce more as well. It makes no sense to me, but this is what they're left with.
Before the winter. At the weekend, German Chancellor Olaf Scholz secured a new deal for gas and diesel with the UAE and also held talks with Saudi Arabia and Qatar. French giant Total Energies on Friday signed a new $1.5 billion deal to help expand Doha's natural gas production. A day earlier, Spain announced that it had increased the flow capacity of its pipeline with France, meaning it could supply up to 6% of its neighbor's natural gas consumption.
So this is what Tony Blinken meant when he said that we're working day and night to secure other means of gas and resources and fuel for Europe and the rest of the world. They are going to the Arabs. They have a new pipeline coming from Norway now. They're asking all of these places to increase production. At the same time, Russia, they can't stop production, and they have so much supply of this gas now that they're just flaring. They're flaring the gas. This is another issue that is going on. Now, Russia's just burning gas. While Europe is anticipating a energy crisis this winter, Russia is just burning gas into the air. I mean, what a crazy world we're living in. Crazy world. Let's listen and see if there's more of this clip.
Now, as energy prices soar, many small German businesses are struggling to pay their bills and stay open. Industry groups say 1 in 10 small and medium-sized companies in Germany have had to cut back their work.
Yeah, it's not just Germany. Small businesses are closing in France, in the Netherlands, in Denmark, all over Western Europe. This is hurting small businesses. The large businesses are okay because they have the means. All the small businesses are closing or getting eaten up by the larger businesses. Is this worth it? Is this worth it? The war in Ukraine and Ukraine being part of NATO and not letting the people of Donbas having their independence. Is all of this worth it? Not negotiating a peace deal? Joe Biden could negotiate peace right now. He is not interested in negotiating peace. It's really interesting that Joe Biden is trying to negotiate. They really want to get Brittany Garner, the WNBA basketball player who's in jail in Russia. They would love to get her released and home before the elections in November so they can parade her around as another accomplishment of Joe Biden. So the Biden administration is actually trying to negotiate with Russia for the release of Brittany Garner and another prisoner that Russia has. And Russia refuses to even answer their calls on that. They won't negotiate with them. And then to negotiate to end the war in Ukraine, the United States government, the Biden administration, has no interest in negotiating an end to the war. Not only do they not have any interest in negotiating an end to the war, they won't allow Ukraine to negotiate peace with Russia. Let me say that again. It's very important. Ukraine is the puppet here. Ukraine is being used by the Biden administration. Biden has all the leverage over Ukraine. If Biden tells Ukraine to bark, they bark. If he says jump, they jump. Biden controls Ukraine. He has the leverage of Ukraine. Ukraine is in Biden's pocket like a little pet mouse. That's the leverage that Biden has over Ukraine. So Ukraine actually, they've tried to enter into negotiations with Russia and negotiate peace for their own country, for their own people. And the Biden administration won't allow Ukraine to negotiate peace. This is absolutely crazy. Tucker Carlson did a great breakdown of this last Thursday. And we're going to play this clip of Tucker Carlson and talk more about this, how the Biden administration will not allow Ukraine to negotiate peace with Russia. Take a listen.
Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson Tonight. Happy anniversary. This week marks the 7-month anniversary of the beginning of the war in Ukraine, something that's still going on and isn't talked about quite as much anymore. So the day that war began, which was February 24th, two things were very obvious. The first was that there was no way the Ukrainian army would be able to win a decisive military victory over Russia. And the reason was simple. Russia is too big. Ukraine is too small. The Russian military is many times the size of the Ukrainian military. Plus, of course, it has nuclear weapons. Russia itself is the largest country on planet Earth. It's got a relatively huge economy for the region, and it's got 145 million people who live there.
The only reason that Ukraine is still in this fight and still fighting 7 months later is because of the Biden administration and the support that they are getting from the West. Everything that Tucker Carlson is saying here, this is not even a fair fight at all. This thing should have been negotiated and there should have been a peace settlement. And the only reason that there's not, when you look at the odds against Ukraine, the only reason that Ukraine is still in this is because of the support and the encouragement that they're getting to continue to fight from the West. It's outrageous. If we would step, and that shows you the leverage we have over Ukraine. If we would step back and say, look, we're not going to support you anymore if you don't negotiate peace, or just allow them to negotiate peace, because this is something that they've attempted to do. Tucker goes into it here. Take a listen.
Russia itself is the largest country on planet Earth. It's got a relatively huge economy for the region, and it's got 145 million people who live there. Ukraine has a population of about 40 million. It's the poorest country in Europe. It's got an average annual income that is much lower than Albania's. So just by looking at the most basic Wikipedia level numbers, it was clear right away that if Ukraine wanted to remain a sovereign country, and of course all of us wanted that for Ukraine, Ukraine was going to have to reach some kind of negotiated settlement with Russia. Pitched battles were not going to do it. Now that's not a moral judgment. You can root for the Ukrainian military all you want, but it's still a fact, and there's no getting around it. The second thing that was immediately evident about this war was how unusually destructive it was and was going to be. It wasn't just Ukraine that was getting pummeled, though it certainly was. It was the entire Western economy, including our economy. Russian energy fuels Europe. A recession in Germany was certain to lead to a recession here. And in the months since, it has. A bad one. The longer this war goes on, inevitably, the poorer everyone is going to be, with the exception probably of Vladimir Putin. So we are breaking things that are very hard to rebuild. Again, this was very obvious the first day of the war. You weren't allowed to say it at the time. Anyone who did was denounced as a Russian spy. But it was still clearly true. And the Ukrainians certainly understood it. Back in April, according to an account in Foreign Policy magazine, negotiators from the governments of Russia and Ukraine met secretly and, quote, appeared to have tentatively agreed on the outlines of a negotiated interim settlement to end the war.
This is the part that I wanted you to hear and focus on. Hold on. Hold on, Tucker. This comes from Foreign Affairs Magazine. This is a report from Foreign Affairs Magazine that says that that negotiate. Now, think about this, people. Ukraine and Russia and Germany and France had already been negotiating. I mean, the things that were causing this conflict have been in place, honestly, since before the Orange Revolution in 2004. But going back, if you want to go back to the Orange Revolution in 2004, these same issues have been the source of the conflict between Ukraine and Russia. I mean, it goes back even further than that to the 1990s and the Warsaw Pact and all. I mean, I could go back and take you back to how far this conflict goes. A lot of people just want to focus on 7 months ago when Russia went into Ukraine. But no, this conflict goes back. The issues that are plaguing that region go back, way back. But in 2014, Germany, France, Russia, Ukraine, they entered into the Minsk Accords. The Minsk Accords were a attempt to negotiate peace before war started. The Minsk Accords. The United States were not involved in the Minsk Accords. Why were the United States not involved in the Minsk Accords? Why was England not involved in the Minsk Accords? Why was it only Germany, France, Russia, and Ukraine? It's because the United States doesn't want peace. That's why the United States supported the coup d'etat in 2014 in Ukraine. Yeah, the United States started all of this. They don't want peace. So they weren't involved in the Minsk Accords. And after you had the Minsk agreements, you had the Minsk 1 and Minsk 2 agreements, the United States encouraged the Ukrainian people to go back on the agreements that they made in Minsk. So this entire time, Russia has been attempting to negotiate with Ukraine. And every time they come to an agreement and try to negotiate, the United States is there in the back, forcing Ukraine not to agree to the terms, forcing Ukraine to go back on the terms. This is what's really going on. So this is what Tucker Carlson is talking about here. This does not come from him. This comes from a report from Foreign Affairs Magazine that says that after the war started, shortly after the war started, these delegations from Ukraine and Russia, who had already been negotiating in Minsk, got together privately to negotiate again on a settlement shortly after the war started.
Back in April, according to an account in Foreign Policy Magazine, negotiators from the government...
Foreign Policy Magazine, I think I said Foreign Affairs.
...in Ukraine met secretly and, quote, appeared to have tentatively agreed on the outlines of a negotiated interim settlement to end the war. The terms of the deal were simple. Russia would withdraw its troops from Ukraine. Ukraine would promise not to join NATO. So each side would get the thing that it wants most, simple and effective, and it might have worked. But the Biden administration adamantly opposed this settlement. Biden's advisors didn't just want the Russians to leave Ukraine. That's what they told us they wanted on television. But no. Biden's advisors wanted a total regime change war against Russia, apparently to avenge the election of Donald Trump, which they believed Putin was responsible for. And they were willing to fight to the last Ukrainian to get it. So on April 9th of this year, the White House...
It's more than that. And I've talked about this. It's not because of Donald Trump and that they believe Russia helped Donald Trump. They know that Russia didn't help Donald Trump because they set the whole Russia narrative up. So that part, even I don't know if that's in the foreign policy article, that's the reason that they want regime change in Russia because of the 2016 election. But they know that Russia didn't didn't interfere in the 2016 election because they did everything to frame Russia. So they know that it wasn't Russia. So I don't buy that as the excuse to why they want regime change in Russia. I told you that I believe that the roots of the break with Russia, you remember Obama, I did the whole podcast, the Russian Reset podcast. I think that was episode 107 that I mentioned in the beginning of this podcast. I talk about the Russian Reset, how Hillary Clinton showed up with the button with Sergei Lavrov and we want to reset Russian relations. And then a few months later, when Obama is running in the 2012 election, he tells Mitt Romney that Russia's not the problem, that it's Al-Qaeda. It's not Russia. And then after what happened in Syria, what happened in not allowing them to topple Assad and Russia and Putin backing Assad, that this enmity started to build up between Russia. I think it has a lot more to do with that than the fact that Russia helped Donald Trump. So that part I don't buy. But listen to what Tucker Carlson is saying here. He's saying that this foreign policy article is saying that these delegations from Ukraine and Russia had met in private to negotiate peace, to negotiate a settlement, that Ukraine would not join NATO and Russia would pull out of Ukraine, and the Biden administration used the leverage that Biden has over Ukraine and told them not to agree to this peace settlement, to keep fighting, to keep dying, so we can somehow achieve some regime change in Russia. This is what Tucker Carlson is saying here.
Advisors wanted a total regime change war against Russia, apparently to avenge the election of Donald Trump, which they believed Putin was responsible for, and they were willing to fight to the last Ukrainian to get it. So on April 9th of this year, the White House dispatched its hapless cutout, then British Prime Minister Boris Johnson, to Kiev. According to Ukrainian news media, Johnson communicated two messages to the Zelensky government. Quote, the first is that Putin is a war criminal. He should be pressured, not negotiated with. And the second is that even if Ukraine is ready to sign some agreements on guarantees with Putin, the West is not. In other words, who cares what the Ukrainians want? America and the UK demand total war with Russia, regime change war with Russia. And of course, the Ukrainians caught in the middle had no choice but to concede. So days later, the peace negotiations fell apart. This was virtually unreported at the time, but it was the turning point in the war in Ukraine. This was the moment where the goal changed from restoring Ukraine to what it was before the invasion, and that seems reasonable to everyone in the West, to something very different, to a war designed to topple Vladimir Putin, just like we toppled Saddam Hussein, and then hoping for the best afterward. That is clearly insane and dangerous. But that's where we are. And from that point on, everything changed. And that is how we got to where we are today, which is the closest we have ever been to nuclear conflict in history.
Yeah, we're going to talk more about the doomsday clock here in the moment, because it's 100 seconds to midnight, folks. 100 seconds to midnight. We're going to talk about what that means. But Tucker Carlson does a great breakdown there, and he's absolutely right. Let's see if I think there's a little bit more of Tucker here, and then I'm going
to
show
you. This week, President Zelensky of Ukraine gave an interview to the left-wing newspaper The Guardian. And in it, he casually called for the United States to nuke Vladimir Putin. Quote, the other nuclear states need to say very firmly that as soon as Russia even thinks of carrying out nuclear strikes on foreign territory, in this case, the territory of Ukraine, there will be swift retaliatory nuclear strikes to destroy the nuclear launch sites in Russia. Parse that, and we're quoting, as soon as Russia even thinks of carrying out nuclear strikes, meaning before Russia actually launches missiles, the U.S. needs to launch nuclear weapons against Russia. In other words, we need to launch nuclear weapons now. Why now? And how do we know?
I mean, look at a map. I mean, it's hilarious. So Finland, look at how close Moscow is to Finland. to Poland. Yeah, so we're gonna fire nuclear weapons into Moscow. I mean, you don't think that any of the radiation and it's going to damage Finland, who's now a member of NATO? Ukraine's not going to get any of that fallout? What about Poland? This is just so idiotic. It's ridiculous.
The U.S. needs to launch nuclear weapons against Russia. In other words, we need to launch nuclear weapons now. Why now? And how do we know that's what Zelensky meant? Because Zelensky was responding to this warning from the Russian government on Wednesday. Watch.
I want to remind you that our country also has various means of destruction.
So this is Vladimir Putin. You've probably heard that Vladimir Putin made a nuclear threat. This is what they're talking about. This is Vladimir Putin talking in Russian, and it's being translated. And this is the nuclear threat that everybody's been talking about that Vladimir Putin made. And I mean, the threat that he makes is basically the only card that he has left. Like I told you in the beginning of this podcast, he only has two cards. He has the nuclear arsenal and his supply of gas and oil. Those are his two cards. And one of those cards has been taken away from him now. And this is what he's talking about. Now, I want you to get into the mind of Vladimir Putin. He's tried to negotiate Minsk. He's tried to negotiate after the war started, sending delegations to negotiate with Ukraine privately. Each time that he's tried to negotiate since 2014, the Americans have gotten in the way of negotiations for peace. So he can't negotiate with Ukraine anymore. He's thinking to himself, it is absolutely useless for me to negotiate with Ukraine. I need to be negotiating with Joe Biden if I want to negotiate peace. And Joe Biden is not interested in negotiating peace because Joe Biden is trying to have regime change in Russia and he wants Putin gone. So Putin can't negotiate with Joe Biden because Putin can't give Joe Biden what he wants, because what Joe Biden wants is Putin gone. And Joe Biden can't negotiate with Putin because Putin wants to negotiate peace. And Joe Biden wants Putin gone. You understand? So that leaves Putin in this corner where he can't negotiate with Ukraine directly, because it's futile to negotiate with Ukraine because they don't have any power. All the power is in Washington. And he can't negotiate with Joe Biden because Joe Biden wants him gone. So he's in a corner now, and we've taken away the gas card. So the only card he has now is the nuclear threat. So this is what this clip that Tucker was playing here of Vladimir Putin making the nuclear threat. Take a listen.
Zelensky was responding to this warning from the Russian government on Wednesday. Watch.
I want to remind you that our country also has various means of destruction. And for separate components and more modern than those of NATO countries, and when the territorial integrity of our country is threatened to protect Russia and our people, we will certainly use all means at our disposal. It's not a bluff.
It's not a bluff, says Putin, who we are told is insane, so we probably should take it seriously. He is, after all, running a country with the largest nuclear arsenal on the planet. And he's talking about using nuclear weapons if the West continues to threaten Russia's territorial integrity. It's a conditional warning. And of course, threatening Russia's territorial integrity was never part of the deal, right? You remember this. It's why you wore a Ukrainian lapel pin or put a Ukrainian flag in front of your house. Ukraine was invaded. The point was to kick the Russians out. That seems reasonable by any standard of fairness and decency. But that's not what the Biden administration is pushing for. They're pushing for toppling the government of Russia and once again hoping that everything will be fine after, that someone better will somehow take over. He's bad. Let's kill him. Heard that story before? So in response to what Putin just said, Ukraine's government called for an immediate nuclear attack on Russia, an attack that would, without question, result in the immediate destruction of New York, Washington, D.C., Los Angeles, the deaths of tens of millions of Americans. That's what he just said. Sane people do not talk this way, ever. If there was a moment for the Biden administration to shut this whole thing down and force a negotiated peace, which they could do in an instant, that moment is right now.
Which they can do in an instant. He's absolutely right. So I'm done with Tucker. Let's talk about that. Which he could do in an instant. Joe Biden, President Joe Biden, has the ability to end the war in Ukraine right now. That's the type of leverage he has. That Ukraine is in their pocket. That's what I'm telling you. For evidence of that, let's go back to the clip of Joe Biden, Council of Foreign Relations. He's here with Mr. Haas. And there's another guy. I don't know who this other guy is on the panel with him, but they're at the Council of Foreign Relations, Joe Biden, Haas, and this other guy. And they're talking about Ukraine. And Joe Biden tells this story about an IMF loan and how if Ukraine didn't fire their prosecutor who was looking into his son, that he wasn't going to give them a $1 billion IMF loan. And they ended up firing the prosecutor. This is the type of leverage this man has over Ukraine. He could stop the war tomorrow if he wanted to. Take a listen.
Well, I was not I, but it just happened to be that was the assignment I got. I got all the good ones. So I got Ukraine. And I remember going over convincing our team, our others, to convincing us that we should be providing for loan guarantees. And I went over, I guess, the 12th, 13th time to Kyiv, and I was supposed to announce that there was another $1 billion loan guarantee. And I had gotten a commitment from Poroshenko and from Yatsenyuk that they would take action against the state prosecutor, and they didn't. So they said they were walking out to press conference. We're not going to give you the $1 billion. They said, you have no authority. You're not the president. The president said. I said, call him. I said, I'm telling you, you're not getting $1 billion. I said, you're not getting $1 billion. I'm going to be leaving here. And I think it was, 6 hours? I said, I'm leaving in 6 hours. If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money. Well, son of a bitch. Got fired. If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money.
So that's the type of leverage that Joe Biden has over Ukraine. He has the type of leverage to tell them that if you don't fire this prosecutor who's looking into my son, then you're not getting a $1 billion IMF loan. We've sent them over in the last 7 months, we've sent them over $80 billion. This is a $1 billion IMF loan. We've sent them $80 billion in the last 7 months. Joe Biden is daddy in Ukraine. And daddy won't let them negotiate peace. Why does Joe Biden want this war to continue? It's not good for us. It's not good for Europe. It's not good for anyone. Why do they want this war to continue? This is so bizarre. And he has so much support from all you good liberals. You good warmongering liberals just love Joe Biden and his warmongering. You all are hypocrites, all of you. Now, I have so much. The head of the United Nations, or the chief diplomat, the American diplomat, I forget her name, the black woman to the United Nations, she was on The View on Friday. So this was the morning after that Tucker Carlson report. And then you have this UN ambassador on The View. And I watch The View. I want to see what propaganda and narratives that are being pushed on that show. It is a show like the Bill Maher show, and there's a couple of other shows that that do drive news, and I like to see what those dingbats are talking about. There was a time on my podcast, you guys remember, if you've been listening to my podcast, that I used to play a lot of clips from The View, but it's kind of low-hanging fruit. But I still watch and see what's going on, and they do have a lot of really important guests, and that's another really big reason that I watch it. And they had the ambassador to the UN on the show on Friday, the Friday after that Tucker Carlson clip that I just played. That Tucker Carlson clip came from Thursday. That next morning, the UN ambassador was on The View. And I want you to take a listen to this clip. This was a question that they started talking about Russia and the threat that Russia made of the nuclear threat and all that. And then Joy Behar asked the UN ambassador, Biden's UN ambassador, this question. And I want you to take a listen to her answer.
So let us start with Russia, okay? Yes. Here you have Putin. He's growing more desperate as the war goes on in Ukraine.
Exactly.
He now has issued some kind of conscription, mm-hmm. and they're fleeing like mad because they don't want to go to war in his country. China and India have basically signaled they're not really going to help him. Mm-hmm. And now he's sort of rattling the saber about nuclear war, which is very frightening to listen to. Now, I'm old enough to remember the Cuban Missile Crisis when JFK made a deal with the Russians, with Khrushchev. Do you think that Biden can do something behind the scenes the way Kennedy did at that time to stop this crazy talk and behavior?
Understand what she's saying. She's going back to the Cuban Missile Crisis in the 1960s, the conflict, Russia, Khrushchev, bringing nuclear warheads to Cuba, setting them up, and I played the clip for you. I played the clip for you of Kennedy's speech at the University of the Americas, his speech for peace, and how Kennedy did everything to negotiate peace from behind the scenes, his rhetoric to the media, his speech that he gave at the University of the Americas was one of peace, trying to negotiate peace. He wanted to negotiate peace. What Joy Behar is asking the UN ambassador, her name is Linda Thomas Greenfield, that's who this woman is. Joy Behar asked the UN ambassador, can Biden do something like what Kennedy did and behind the scenes and use his leverage and use his prestige as the president of the United States? Can Biden do something to negotiate peace so we don't have a nuclear war, is what Joy Behar is asking the UN ambassador here. And listen to her answer.
Do you think that Biden can do something behind the scenes the way Kennedy did at that time to stop this crazy talk and behavior?
Look, we have been engaging with the Russians prior to their taking this horrible action against Ukraine.
That's a lie.
Biden spoke with Putin. He met with Putin. We discouraged them from taking this action. And Putin was bent on doing that.
Yes.
They are clearly not ready for diplomacy yet, but we're going to keep the pressure on them until
Russia's not ready for diplomacy, is what Linda Thomas Greenfield says. Russia entered into the Minsk Accords in 2014, have been trying to negotiate peace since 2014 with Ukraine, to negotiate a deal on the Donbass, to negotiate a deal on Crimea, to negotiate a deal to keep them out of NATO. Russia's been negotiating since 2014. Actively negotiating. I have evidence of that. I don't have any evidence of Joe Biden trying to negotiate peace. And the UN ambassador here, after Joy Behar is, you know, worried, asking her a question, is there something Joe Biden can do to end this? And she says, no, there's nothing we can do. We've tried to negotiate with Putin. He's not interested in negotiation. It's an absolute lie. It's a lie. They haven't tried to negotiate. As a matter of fact, they've been trying to prevent Ukraine from entering into or following through with agreements that they made. So Joe Biden is lying to you. His people are lying to you. And this is very very dangerous. Very dangerous, this what we're witnessing right now. Joe Biden's national security advisor, Jake Sullivan, was on all the Sunday shows this past Sunday answering questions about Ukraine and Russia. And unlike Kennedy in 1960, I want you to listen to Jake Sullivan here. This is not the talk of someone who's trying to de-escalate things. This is a talk of someone who's trying to escalate this war. This is someone who seemingly wants nuclear war. This conversation just absolutely just blew my mind. First of all, the way Chuck Todd just flippantly asked these questions about responding to nuclear war and basically having a pissing contest with Vladimir Putin in the nuclear age. The question itself and the way that Chuck Todd asked the question was astonishing. But listen to Jake Sullivan's answer.
While you were talking, we were able to show some footage of people voting with under the supervision of armed Russian guards. So just to give folks a taste of what kind of referendum.
He puts air quotes up. That's hilarious. So that's the other part. We're going to listen to Jake Sullivan here. And then I still have so much more. I don't know if I'm going to be able to get all this in. But so they're having a referendum. And so these are the people who talk about the threats to democracy. Oh my God, democracy's under attack. Democracy, democracy. We have to support democracies. We have to care for democracies. We have to defend democracies. Well, they're having democracy right now in the eastern part of Ukraine, in the Donbass, just like they did in Crimea. People came out for the referendum to vote to be annexed by Russia. They're having that same referendum right now. That's what Chuck Todd's talking about here before in the beginning of this question, because the Biden administration and the West, the people who have been talking about democracy, democracy so much over the last 18 to 20 months, these people now don't like democracy when it's in the eastern part of Ukraine. They didn't like democracy when it was in Crimea. But that's what Chuck Todd is talking about here. That referendum is going on. And he puts up air quotes, referendum, because the Biden administration and the West in general says that they don't care about the democracy that's going on in eastern Ukraine, that they will not recognize that referendum.
Folks, a taste of what kind of referendum this is. I want to talk about the nuclear threats from Vladimir Putin. There was a report this week that folks in the Biden administration have made it clear privately of the severe consequences. Does this mean the red phone is working again? Because at the beginning of this conflict, there was
red
a lot
phone,
of
that's another relationship going back to Khrushchev and Kennedy. The red phone was set up to negotiate, but that was something that Kennedy wanted to do. Kennedy wanted to negotiate peace. He talked openly about wanting to negotiate peace. I haven't heard Joe Biden talking about negotiating peace, but that's what the red phone is a reference to.
Have made it clear privately of the severe consequences. Does this mean the red phone is working again? Because at the beginning of this conflict, there was a lot of concern that some of the basic communications that we had from military to military, intel to intel, you had a hard time getting your counterparts to return calls. Does this mean the red phone is working again?
Well, Chuck, we've been careful to protect the timing and the content of the conversations we have with the Russian government, with the Kremlin. But the answer to your question is yes, we do have the capacity to speak directly at senior levels and to be clear about our messages to them and to receive their messages. That has happened frequently over the course of the past few months. It has happened even in just the last few days. But we have not wanted to indicate exactly what those channels look like because we want to be able to protect them so that we have the continuing ability to reach Russia and tell them in no uncertain terms for example, what the consequences would be, and they would be catastrophic if Russia had went down the dark road of nuclear weapons use.
I guess the question is why the strategic ambiguity here? Why not draw a public line? If he's publicly threatening nuclear weapons, why not send a public message, which I'm sure the people in Europe and Ukraine would like to hear, that says, you cross this line, Katie, bar the door, Mr. Putin.
Listen to this. Listen to that question. This is what I'm talking about. So Chuck Todd is Jake Sullivan saying, yes, we're talking to Russia, and he insinuates that they're talking through a third party, probably Belarus. And Chuck Todd is saying that, well, why don't you come out publicly and have a pissing contest with Vladimir Putin? Why don't you come out and say, we're going to do this if you do this? And, you know, why don't you escalate things? That'll be great for us and our media coverage, is what Chuck Todd is saying here.
You cross this line, Katie, bar the door, Mr. Putin.
Well, let me say it plainly. If Russia crosses this line, there will be catastrophic consequences.
Catastrophic.
The United States will respond decisively. Now, in private channels, we have spelled out in greater detail exactly what that would mean. But we want to be able to have the credibility of speaking directly to senior leadership in Russia and laying out for them what the consequences would be without getting into a rhetorical tit-for-tat publicly. But we will not hesitate in saying publicly that there will be catastrophic consequences
catastrophic.
For Russia.
You've used that word twice.
If they choose to proceed, and the United States and our allies will respond decisively.
You've used that word catastrophic just now twice.
Yeah, used catastrophic twice, Chuck Todd. What you just heard Jake Sullivan say, does that sound like de-escalation? It sure doesn't sound like anything that we heard from the Kennedy administration in 1963. I know that. Or 1962. I mean, that doesn't sound like de-escalation to me. That sounds like escalation. That Jake Sullivan, who's the national security advisor for Joe Biden, is saying, if you do this, this is what we're going to do. If you use even tactical nukes in Ukraine, remember, we used depleted uranium in Iraq. So we've used tactical nukes. But if you use tactical nukes in Ukraine, if you fire any nukes, you do anything, then we're going to respond in kind. It's going to be catastrophic. Does that sound like de-escalation? No, it doesn't sound like de-escalation. And like I was telling you a few moments ago, the doomsday clock is 100 seconds to midnight. I'm going to close by playing some clips about the doomsday clock. I want you to listen to a little bit about what the doomsday clock is, and I want you to understand that we're in some very serious times. We have not been this close to nuclear conflict with Russia since the 1960s, since the Cold War. The doomsday clock is 100 seconds to midnight. Take a listen to this clip.
The doomsday clock first debuted in 1947 as a graphic on the cover of the first edition of the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists magazine. Artist Marta Langsdorff was married to Alexander Langsdorff Jr., a Manhattan Project scientist. Langsdorff and other concerned scientists founded the Bulletin 2 years prior, feeling a responsibility to warn and educate the public about the possibly disastrous consequences of their creations. Atomic bombs had been used for the first time in 1945, killing 130,000 residents of the Japanese cities of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Initially, the time on the clock depicted the hour hand pointing straight at the zero hour, with the minute hand placed at just 7 minutes before midnight. The time was completely arbitrary, though. Langsdorff just thought it seemed the right time. The graphic quickly adopted the name of the Doomsday Clock, and eventually gained world recognition as a symbol for the threat of an impending nuclear apocalypse. Since 1947, the Bulletin has regularly adjusted the clock face when they perceive a change in threat level, also taking into account other non-nuclear factors like climate change, bioweapons, and cyber threats. Doomsday seems just a few ticks away now, but time on this clock doesn't really reflect actual time, nor is it particularly linear. In 1949, the Bulletin set the clock to 3 minutes until midnight due to Soviet Union nuclear testing.
Truman's dramatic announcement that Russia had the atom secret.
And to 2 minutes until midnight in 1953, thanks to the U.S. developing the hydrogen bomb. But a decade later, the clock turned back to 12 minutes before midnight, thanks to the U.S. and Soviet Union ending atmospheric nuclear testing.
You hear that? Because they negotiated peace, it went from 2 minutes to midnight back to 12 minutes to midnight because the United States and Russia were able to negotiate peace.
And to 2 minutes until midnight in 1953, thanks to the U.S. developing the hydrogen bomb. But a decade later, the clock turned back to 12 minutes before midnight, thanks to the U.S. and Soviet Union ending atmospheric nuclear testing.
A milestone in 63, East and West banned the testing of nuclear weapons in the atmosphere.
The minute hand has continued to fluctuate through a range of minutes before midnight since then, from 7 minutes till in 1968 thanks to Vietnam, to 10 minutes till in 1972 at the signing of the first Strategic Arms Limitation Treaty.
So it's been 7 minutes till, 10 minutes till, 12 minutes till, it's even gotten till 2 minutes till, but right now, at this moment you're in right now, we're 100 seconds, less than 2 minutes till midnight. I think it's pretty significant. Here's one more clip and then I'll play us out.
We are 100 seconds to midnight. That's the latest setting on the doomsday clock, and it's the closest we've ever been. What this essentially means is that it takes less than 2 minutes for the beautiful world around us to go up in flames. Now, this setting was revealed by the Science and Security Board of the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists. With the Ukraine-Russia war triggering also a lot of nuclear saber rattling and questions about a nuclear war, scientists have again reiterated the need to immediately de-escalate.
So we need de-escalation. That's what we need. We need negotiation. We need grown folks in the room. And that's not what we got right now. Not with the Biden administration. The Biden administration is escalating. And I'm going to be honest with you. I think the Biden administration had something to do with the explosions that destroyed the Nord Stream pipelines. I believe that the Biden administration is working for the military-industrial complex, and they have no interest in de-escalation. And it's 100 seconds to midnight, folks. I hope we're all here next week, and if you are, I will be here for episode 135. Please visit the website according to Sam with the number 2.com. Thank you so much for listening.